As our podcast has evolved over the last year and our distribution has increased, we still wanted to make sure we chatted with the folks that helped us start our show by coming into our studio and talking to us about beer. As 2021 rolls around, we will be continuing our COVID shows remotely, seeking out more national brands while still staying true to our Michigan roots. We will be launching on this stream the Michigan series, which will focus on Michigan breweries as extra content for you to check out. We hope you enjoy this upcoming episode with Griffinclaw as we highlight the Flying Buffalo 2020 series and talk about their mass change into making hand sanitizer, as well as so many other products at the Griffinclaw Clubhouse Brewery. Upcoming shows include the one we recorded right after, which is Blackgrass Cider. We also have Joe Short coming on Friday, November 20th. November 27th, Robin Cleveland of Norden Aquavit. And our first episode in December, the 4th, we're going to have Eric Hildon of Toppling Goliath. Cheers, and we hope you enjoy the show.
And we are live, episode 244, Better on Draft podcast, probably the last one we will ever do in person with the way the life and the world is. But I am glad to see your guys' smiling faces as we are here at Griffinclaw in Rochester Hills, Michigan. I myself have a nice Griffinclaw Georgia Peach seltzer that I am ready to start drinking. But return guest, ESG, in fact, extra special guest, did you bring your glass, Mr. Kyle Vandeventer?
No. Sorry.
What a shame.
It's in my cupboard, though.
Well, welcome to the show. We appreciate you taking the time. Again, we did this last year for your Flying Buffalo release. We're a few weeks late, but we are here and excited to bring you in. Why don't you tell us real quick, run down the 2020 lineup for Flying Buffalo?
Yeah, Flying Buffalo. So this year we bought back some good old faithfuls, the original Modern Times Coffee, Salted Caramel Chocolate Pecan, Marshmallow Almond Chocolate, and then the two newbies this year are Cherry Cordial and Gingerbread Man.
What's your favorite so far?
I like Gingerbread Man. Mole was the hit for a couple years for us, and we decided to retire that this year. So this is the spice characteristic. But brown sugar, molasses, a little bit of spice. It's nice.
Well, let's pass around the Gingerbread Man while I bring in one of my co-hosts. Nick, how you doing today?
This is my last show before I am a father.
Congrats.
Wow.
Congratulations. We know you're going to be gone for a little bit. I didn't want to spoil it, but we do have a replacement for you.
Oh, yeah? Who's
until
that?
You're going to be gone. Who's and his name is exactly 8 letters long. 4 and 4, Matt Bush. We will be bringing him back.
Oh, lovely. So Matt Bush gets to replace me. Oh.
Until you come back, which is perfectly fine.
Oh, thanks.
So you're drinking the Gingerbread Man.
Yeah.
How's your week been? And
Wow, it's good.
It's good. What do you think of the Gingerbread Man?
Gingerbread Man is very gingerbread-ish. So I've said on the show before that this is my version of Bourbon County. This is the stuff that if I have to chase, this is the stuff I chase. So every time it gets released around this time of the year, I'm going for it. I'm not allowed to buy any beer still. I'm still on, quarantine or lockdown for that, but I'm not allowed to buy any beer, but so anytime I get it, it's always a joy.
Well, we do have another guest. It's weird to call her a guest, but she is a guest. A sales rep for Griffinclaw. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey. I'm back.
I'm sorry. It's
my
great.
My name is Angela. I work for Griffinclaw now with Kyle.
I know we kind of touched about it when you came on for the anniversary episode, 5 years we've been doing this. What area, territory are you working for Griffinclaw?
Oakland, Macomb, and then Saginaw, Midland area.
So I got
so
the
nice
real
little stretch.
The real hard-hitting question for you. What is the most, like, what is the best or, like, the thing that you've learned that is your favorite thing that you've learned since becoming a saleswoman?
Oh, geez.
What knowledge has Kyle put upon you?
It's interesting because it goes hand-in-hand with kind of what I know from working in the industry, but then also, like, it's completely new and different. I don't know. It's kind of like the more analytical side of the business, trying to make sure that, the products are placed where they belong, that goals, numbers, all that fun stuff.
It's the wrong answer. You're supposed to say your boss is very good looking. So.
And that too.
Thank you.
What have you found the hardest, though, moving into sales from marketing and, working at a restaurant, bar, brewery?
people will tell you no.
That's
rejection.
That's definitely a little bit fair. What is your favorite in the lineup of the 2020 Flying Buffaloes?
Actually, I think I really like the base, the original, and then I think I enjoyed maybe the marshmallow second.
Okay, we'll do the marshmallow next. I got two more co-hosts here with me. Wendy, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am great. What do you think of the gingerbread man?
Well, I am not a fan of gingerbread, so for me, it's a no, but it is really good, and my friends who I know that do like gingerbread will love it.
Awesome.
There you go.
And we have Rob over here. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing pretty darn good.
We've been drinking a lot of Bourbon County beers.
A lot. I started off, actually, I was in the restaurant, and I had the apple pie old-fashioned to start today, so I'm actually sitting here with three of the Flying Buffaloes.
How did you get them so fast?
Perks of being by the can.
Yeah,
exactly.
So.
Perks of being by the can. So I've got, so far right now, I've got the cherry cordial, the Modern Times coffee, and the gingerbread man. I am always partial to the coffee variant. Obviously, when they started with the Great Lakes coffee, which, I mean, I miss it, but Modern Times definitely makes up for it, and I'm happy that this one came back for a second time. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of curious in terms of bringing Modern Times back to and using their coffee. Was it just that it was just that good last year that you were going to go for it again, or was there any type of thoughts of going to any other type of coffee going into Flying Buffalo?
This is the last year of Modern Times, so. Yeah, we had a really good relationship with them. They're killer. They're a good relationship out of California. So this is the last year of it, though. And we're actually going to be doing coffee much different next year, looking at cold brew. So it'll open up a lot more possibilities, a lot more of possibilities for us when it comes to that specific beer. So the way that we make it now, I have to predetermine how many coffee barrels I have 12 months before we release the beer. And that's kind of not a logistical nightmare at all. We're doing it much differently next year, doing some cold brew, and we're going to look at a lot more local, going back to the local feel. So,
in the beginning, you know, during the pandemic, you know, one of the things that Griffin Claw was going into was obviously buying your beer back from your distributors in order to make, you know, hand sanitizer and, you know, donate that to first responders and healthcare workers. And, you know, clearly we're not out of the woods yet. And in fact, we may be well deep into the woods now, considering what's getting ready to happen probably in the coming weeks. But I'm curious, in a time where, you know, businesses are trying to hold on to their pennies and their dollars to keep businesses running and keep their employees, you know, working so that they can make money, that it's different to see that decision to spend the money to get the beer back. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what went into that and how helping the community is great, but how that pretty much trumps, you know, the priority of the business and your employees. Or yeah. Did it? Trump was just kind of a side, like a balance.
I think it was a couple of things. So we looked at it as the first priority was, oh crap, we're going to have a lot of old beer out there, and that was a huge concern at the outset. And then all of a sudden we started making sanitizer. We actually started making sanitizer a week before we shut down. So we were doing it just solely so we could put like little sanitizer bottles on each table to make customers feel more comfortable. And then legitimately 5 days after we made that decision, everything went to hell. So we didn't really expect to make sanitizer at the level that we did. We're talking like 35 to 40,000 gallons worth. Jeez. And like we didn't expect that, but we did it. And the way that we could do it the best way that we knew how to was taking old repurposed beer. So it was kind of like a hand in hand. It just fit. It literally was a puzzle piece that fit. And it was supposed to be like It felt like it was supposed to be that way. So we reached out to our distribution network and said, hey, give me tallies of everything that you have in your inventory, and if anyone's returned anything, we'll take it back. Send it back your next pickup. And within 3 to 4 weeks, we had this whole facility filled. I mean, you can see all those empty kegs over there filled to the brim with kegs. And we were running this still 24/7. We had a three-man team doing 24/7, getting that liquid out and made into sanitizer. And then the state of Michigan called, and DTE called, and hospitals called, and banks were calling, and nursing homes were calling. So it was a thing where my email turned into a legitimate turnstile of mm-hmm. I need sanitizer. What can I do? Mm-hmm. So it just kind of fit. Like, legitimately, I can't say it enough that it just all happened. And I have no idea. Like, I feel like I blacked out. I have no idea what happened for those 4 months. But it's all just worked, and it fit. So
it's been worth it.
Oh, completely. And we still get phone calls about sanitizer, maybe 2 to 3 times a week.
Wow. Are you still making it?
I wasn't a phone call. I was an email. Mm-hmm. Although I can't remember what the response was, but it was pretty much, hey, you're in line.
Yeah. So I think the initial email, I had to put it in segments. So I think the last tally after I stopped tallying was about 1,300 people. At one point, ranging anywhere from can I get a gallon to the state of Michigan asked for 15,000 gallons. So, I mean, it was legitimately across the board. Can I get 10 spray bottles for my salon? Okay. Yeah, I mean, you can buy them through a tap room. You don't need to come here. You know what I mean? So it was all over the board. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get out as much as possible. But, like Beaumont and Ascension and Trinity and all of them, they took front seat and kind of went from there. And police stations and fire stations and
all your front line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Birmingham police still comes by the brewery. Unexpected, I might add. which is fine. We want to support them. A fair warning would be fine.
Right. Kind of going back to, going into beer, because we hadn't one of the obviously trends that happens in the fall, of course, is pumpkin spice and pumpkin beer. But with obviously, we talked to Barb Baker back in episode 241, I think that was, maybe 242. And, you know, one of the first things that I asked her about was she had the shirt in her scene magazine that said pumpkin everything. Mm-hmm. And
pumpkin over everything.
Pumpkin over everything. And so with Screaming Pumpkin, obviously being one of those pumpkin spice beers, it gets some flack. But you guys were actually just in a Vine Pair article mm-hmm. where brewers across the country were asked about what their favorite pumpkin beers were, and you guys were on the list. Just talk to us about making a pumpkin beer and for Griffin Claw, where do you see that popularity going in the coming years for pumpkin beer?
Yeah, I mean, I think 4 years ago we were told pumpkin beers are dying. Don't do it. It was a fad in late 90s, early 2000s. Just run away.
Well, there was that time, not to interrupt you, but there was a time 2015, 2016 when everyone and their mother was turning out pumpkin beers to the point where, like, it was the fad 1 year, and then next year they were just sitting on every single
100%.
Shelf. Nobody
That's
was touching
them.
They
put them out in July.
We That's put ours out in July this year.
That's another story another day. But continue.
But, yeah, so 4 years ago we were told it's going to die. It's not worth it. Just get rid of it. And then, so we kind of took precautions the next year. We weren't going to get rid of it. It predates our history. It's Michigan Brewing Company's recipe. It's their brand. And then we took that over when Dan Rogers came over. And so we knew we were going to keep it, but we kind of brewed a little less so it wasn't sitting on shelves in July. And then, the next year, so 3 years ago, it was an okay year. But then 2 years ago, all of a sudden, most of the competition kind of faded away. So, New Belgium's pump kick or whatever didn't come into the state, and a couple other breweries locally didn't make it. So all of a sudden we started creeping up a little bit, and last year was up 10%. This year it was up 33%.
Oh, geez.
So we had the idea, the concept that we were going to go to multiple states last spring. So Ohio and Indiana were signed, sealed, and delivered until COVID happened. And so that all got put to a halt. So we had planned on making about 100 to 200 more barrels of Screamin' Pumpkin. We still made it, and we still sold all of it.
Oh, wow.
So,
and including, like, some of the – I just saw that there was the limited edition, the maple barrel.
Yeah, maple BIB.
Which I missed on that one.
Yeah, we sold all that, too. I mean, we have a couple cases left in the breweries right now, but that's about it.
Yeah.
That was – we took some Bliss barrels and threw it in there about a year ago. So we're not going anywhere with pumpkin stuff. Obviously, it has its little niche, and it has its little, like, one-month window. So we're not going to expand on that until, like, spring. But it's not going anywhere. Screamin' Pumpkin's here to stay. So
why don't you tell us about this? Because we just poured around the table the base beer.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the Flying Buffalo base beer and what kind of goes into just the standard high ABV barrel-aged beer.
Yeah, so Flying Buffalo actually also predates Griffin Claw. This is this was started at Big Rock Trap House in Birmingham before us.
Which we actually got a chance to have a bottle of that.
Oh, really?
Last time we were here.
I do remember that. We dug those out. Yeah,
it was 10 years old, I think, 2009 or 2010 bottle of beer.
Yeah, so this is, and if anyone asks where the name comes from, too, it's not because it was in Buffalo Trace barrels. If you ever walk into Big Rock Chop House, there's literally a buffalo hanging from the ceiling that is a flying buffalo. So...
And you didn't get the Griffin Claw name from White Claw, correct?
No, we predate them as well. So when we came out with our seltzer, we made sure that we weren't going to get sued, even though we had the name first. Whatever. And we're not Harry Potter fans, but we can be if that makes you buy our beer. That's fine. But no, the original predates us, and we've always, really liked the liquid. It's a Russian Imperial style, aged in bourbon barrels for, 10 months, 12 months, 10 months in this one, 9 months. We've always had some questions about the mouthfeel, and I'm a very blunt person. So the mouthfeel has been something that we've kind of worked on. A Russian Imperial stout isn't exactly an oatmeal stout. It's not a milk stout. It's not supposed to, coat your mouth. But we've taken, the feedback a little seriously, and we've improved the mouthfeel, in my opinion. I think it's a lot better than last year. 2 years ago, the ABV skyrocketed on us. So 2 years ago, Flying Buffalo, I think, was almost 17%. So it was a little less mouthfeel than we currently have now, a little more watery. I'm very, very happy with what we have here today. I'm really ecstatic with the team that we have that takes care of all of our barrels. And
So the person to my left and the person to my right are both on Untappd checking in. And I want to bring Ange into the conversation.
For what?
Because as a former social media manager and someone who has managed social media, what do you feel social media plays as a role in brewing these days, for breweries?
Oh, man. Well, with the pandemic, I mean, that was the line of connection between the customers and the business with whatever was happening. I mean, you couldn't go to your favorite places. You can't call them and say, hey, Kyle at Griffin Claw, what's up? So you're online and you're trying to figure out what everybody's doing, who's doing carry out, who's still brewing, that kind of stuff. I think it's really important. I think it'll always be important in some form, whatever the social media is. They talk about younger kids not being on Facebook, so maybe that won't be around in 20 years, but...
Hopefully not.
How do you react to an account that might say, hey, has any of your accounts actually gone and been like, oh, this beer is only a 3.5 on Untappd, why would I carry it?
I would say, okay, that actually hasn't happened, but if it were to happen, I would say that 3.5 is actually very good on Untappd. I think that 3.5 is kind of what I've always said is good, and then anything above that is great. And I know that some people that are in the beer world that rate beers might think what? 3.5? I wouldn't buy anything under a 4. But you have to take into account, people are on there saying I'm going to rate this a 2, but I actually don't like IPAs. So you have to kind of like wean out those bad reviews and find, you know, take it back to statistics class and find out like, okay, well then if you bring them all together, that actually is a pretty fair rating. That's a good rating. And I also just would recommend maybe not looking at the ratings and just buying something that you enjoy.
I mean, if I could say this real quick, you know.
Of course you can.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm the one that would give, like, PBR, for example, just because, like, a 2 or a 2.5 or whatever. But the thing is, sometimes I want to go for that kind of beer. So I don't even know if even as someone that uses Untappd, i.e. myself, would really take a whole lot of stock in what other people rate it. There's too much good beer, not just here in southeastern Michigan, but, you know, throughout the state of Michigan, throughout the country, to where, you know, someone's Untappd rating or the average rating on a beer is going to stop me. Is it going to stop the, you know, someone who's not the average beer drinker? Yeah, probably. But in reality, it shouldn't.
It totally does. I mean, I've come across buyers, they're not saying anything negative towards, like, our product, but they'll look things up in front of me. They're not shy about it. Mm. My boyfriend won't buy anything under a 4, so I don't know if he's listening right now, but I called him out.
Luckily, we're recording. So. He might see it in after post.
I'm going to put it in the first 10 seconds.
I don't really know where it goes from here, because we've kind of seen like so many positive things come out of social media, and we've seen a little bit of negative things, people, you know, leaving bad reviews over COVID policies right now. I mean, it's really like businesses are just fighting tooth and nail to stay afloat and to keep their doors open. Social media was meant to connect people and
not separate people.
Right, and really, it's you're not that online person. You're a human in real life. This is just kind of, it becomes almost too real. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think Kyle was going to say something, though.
Well, I was just going to say, I remember Rate Beer. As a distributor rep, we would take those, like, shelf talkers at, like, okay, 87 or 95 or whatever. And I remember specifically, I was working for a distributor at the time, and Fat Tire was coming to the market, and it had a notoriously bad Rate Beer. And so we printed off a bunch of Rate Beer numbers for Fat Tire and put it under each Fat Tire one, even though it wasn't our brand, just to persuade people not to buy it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Man.
You know, sometimes this business is a little dirty.
Hey, dude.
That was definitely
I'll shiv you. I'll take it.
Were you working for
Blue
Red House at that time?
You
don't have to specify which one, but I'm assuming it was a big name.
Yeah, it was a distributor down here that might have sold the top 2 craft brands in the state. So.
Okay.
But I think with what Andrew's saying about that social media aspect is that, I mean, you look at Tavor, and what Tavor does is they're getting all of these beers from other locales out to you, but they have that stipulation that they pride themselves on providing beers that have a rating above 4 on Untappd.
Is that always true?
That is basically everything that they put on Tavor has a rating above a 4.
Interesting.
And I feel that's somewhat detrimental to other breweries that are out there that are making good quality beers that may be starving for extra business and may want to try and get their beers out to other places in other states, but can't because there's people who are sitting there on Untappd rating things a 1 because I don't normally drink IPAs.
Oh, yeah.
I've got some stuff from Tavor that is definitely not a 4.
That is true. I have as well. There's quite a bit that I think that I've gotten that I would not rate a 4. I'm not even sure I would even rate a 3. But it's just, you know, with social media and how people rate things that, you know, you have to try and take it as on face value and hope that you get something that's going to be a good product when there might
you know
be something out there that's
the
a
next
3.
Year, what's I'm going to start a trend and I'm going to hashtag every single post that says stop rating beer. And it's going to take off. I know it. It's probably already trending even though this is pre-recorded.
it's true.
But I, that's why I used to rate beer too. And
for a while, I used to go like into the halves and the quarters and be, you know, oh, I think this is better, this is worse. And then I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I'll just rate it if I want to try it again, because maybe I remember one day I had like a Belgian Wit, but it was like the 11th or 12th beer I had that day, so it didn't taste good. And success. I remember rating it like a 1. And then I'm like, you know what, let me try this again. And I actually really liked it. And
now
it got
to
the point
where
I'm like,
yep.
Okay, maybe I need to stop rating beers. So I always went with the theory of, you know, for a while when I was rating beers personally, I would just give everything a 5 if I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If I didn't like it, I'd give it a 4. And if I said, you know, if I didn't like it, excuse me, I didn't rate it.
Yeah.
If I wanted to try it again, like that Belgian Wit after 11 beers, then I would just rate it a 4. And it would click in my head that said, hey, you rated this a 4, try it again. As opposed to going through notes upon notes upon notes.
Do you think that maybe age might have a role in if you gave something a lower rating when you were younger versus what you might give it today? Now, because a good example for me for like that is Guinness. I couldn't stand it. Now, all of a sudden, if it's there, I'm going to drink it, and I love it.
It's
not the best example, but
I think all of our palates change, and you know what? That might be a fun little thing to talk about real quick, is there a beer or a style where when you got into craft beer that you did not like that you could love? Rob,
mm-hmm.
Sours?
Yep.
Sours, for sure.
That was an easy pick.
Yeah. But I changed. I decided I was going to take an entire beer fest to figure that out. And
that was a summer fest, wasn't it?
No, that was winter.
Oh, was it winter? Okay. All
and right. there's quite a few that I like. So I've definitely opened up to the style, kind of the same way that I've been about the pumpkin beers. Because I really wasn't about it wasn't that I hated them. I just didn't care for them that much.
Sure.
But I found the ones that I like. So there's a lot of stuff that's out there that you can enjoy.
It was fun revisiting pumpkin beers, working with Griffin Claw and selling Screaming Pumpkin, and like I felt really proud of that product, and I love it. And I was like, you know, it was so interesting. I remember being, you know, like 2015 or something, you walk into the store and every single pumpkin beer that's ever been made in the state of Michigan is available. And how do you know what to choose without going on Untappd? So, you know, so
the
then you
the
kind
can.
Of mm-hmm. you get away from it, and then I was like, wow, this is a damn good beer, and it feels good to drink it when you're cozy in a sweater.
Yeah, like a night like tonight where it's freaking freezing.
It is freezing.
What's the style that you kind of, you know, didn't like when you kind of got into craft beer then?
Mine is definitely IPAs.
IPAs. Yeah.
I couldn't stand them I hated them. They were horrible.
Mm.
And then I started just learning about them and trying to figure out why I liked some okay, and then, and I just, it's changed a lot. Now I tend to get more IPAs, and I'm actually like obsessed with milkshake IPAs right now because it's got the nice mouthfeel, but it's still got the hoppiness.
What about you, Kyle?
IPA. I mean, the first IPA I ever had was a two-hearted, like, 5-liter keg can at college because it had a fish on it because, hell yeah, Saginaw. What? It was atrocious to my palate. At that time, all I knew was like horrible vodka, PBR, and a apparent Guinness every once in a while. So like it was abrasive and gross and crazy. And now that's a huge portion of what I actually drink. So
can we just think about for 1 second what college would have been like if White Claws existed?
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
Would we actually have maybe been more sober because we were drinking 5% seltzers versus vodka out of a Jaeger out of a water bottle?
When I was in college, I was crushing Killian's and Guinness. And then when Four Loko became a huge hit,
oh, I blacked out.
I would go to parties with 2 big cans of Four Loko,
yes, you
and
would.
That would be my night.
Yes, you
that.
Would.
I feel that.
What about you, Nick? What is a
The style for me? I echo what Wendy and Kyle said. IPAs. It just took a long time to really just appreciate what they're trying to do with that style. And I for the longest time, I couldn't stand it. Then one day, it was like night and day almost. It just something just clicked.
It's been 10 years. I still don't like them.
I know.
What is Griffin Claw doing for the winter to prepare?
Oh, man. The fact that, like, we are probably over-diversifying ourselves right now probably pays in our benefit right now. You know, we've... You know, the beer is a crazy, awesome game that we've been playing for, you know, 7+ years, and that's not going away, and we keep on excelling and trying to find our place in this craft beer world. But, you know, we launched this cider program in this cider company effectively a year ago, and that's taking on a whole nother world and a whole nother, like, facet to the business that we didn't expect. And then,
which, to preface real quick, if you're listening right when the show comes out, the next episode is going to be with Ian from Blackgrass.
Yeah, Blackgrass Cider Works.
So definitely stay tuned for that episode. Continue.
Yeah. So that's taken a whole new thing and a different game, really. Something that I really didn't expect. And then we've always had spirits. We've had spirits for 7 years. We've had, you know, we've had to make that to make ourselves a full-fledged restaurant. But then in the last year and a half, we've really taken it seriously. And we launched these new design bottles, these new bourbon brands in the last, like, month. And that's taken on a whole nother world as well, where, you know, I'm talking to people that I've never talked to before about spirits. So that's a whole nother gamut. And then we have a couple things on our plate that are probably going to hit in the spring. But the winter, all we can really do right now is hatch it down, button up, go to town.
Wear a mask.
Yeah, wear a mask. I mean, sanitizer is, like, running through my blood anyways right now. So we'll continue to do that. I mean, we've been very, very lucky with our off-premise world. So package... I mean, we're making 80% more packaged product than we've ever made ever.
Wow.
We made as many cans in the last 4 months than we did the last year and a half combined.
Jeez.
Wow. So and of course there's a can shortage, but that doesn't affect us right now. We're okay. Life is okay.
That does call back to our Oddside episode with Flash Gordon over there talking about how they went from literally going to 99% off premise sales and how they had to, like, restructure their entire can filling and lineup and everything just to go for it. But I think you said you wanted to ask something else.
Yeah. And really, just to kind of talk real quick about the spirits, I would have to say that as far as, like, changing the bottle design, I probably bought that Flying Buffalo bourbon just simply because of, like, this mid-century modern bottle design that is on there and is just amazing. I love it.
I need to have some of that.
Obviously, one of the spirits that sold out ridiculously quickly, unfortunately, kind of for those who don't like the style, kind of going back to pumpkin here.
Oh, hey.
The pumpkin whiskey that
you
guys came out. No, I did not. I did not get any of that. I was very intrigued about it. You guys posted about it. I was like, all right, I'm just going to go tomorrow. And then I found that it was gone.
Gone.
4 hours.
And the post of, you know, this pumpkin whiskey being like 5 years in the making, that it just is gone in a day. I mean, is that something that is possibly there's some more that's going to come out next year? Or is there going to be more? It's like, is this something that's going to be going forward? Because I don't know of anyone who is really doing a whole lot of any type of flavored whiskeys as it is. Never mind doing one that is a pumpkin whiskey that just drove all the suburbanites around here crazy.
Well, the good thing about being an overzealous sales director is that just give me as much liquid as possible. But then, you know, November comes around and, oh, crap, I have a lot of pumpkin. So what do? We just turn it into whiskey. So we've been doing that for about 5 years. So we have a backlog of Screaming Pumpkin every year. And in fact, that even though we were up 33% this year, I still devoted a chunk of that to go to whiskey. So we are continuing.
Here's a question I kind of want to follow up with that. Can a brewery, this is going to get into legalities, but obviously everyone's trying to to make a buck or try to do something with the beers and the stuff that they have. Can a brewery, let's say, for instance, North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline Road, wants to sell you beer to distill to sell? Can they do that?
Yeah, there's some hoop holes, but yeah, I mean, we talked about it. We talked to a couple of breweries when we were making sanitizer, and we couldn't get enough liquid
to turn beer that's needed to make that.
Oh yeah, it's you know, 50 barrels of liquid probably gets me four.
Four of hand sanitizer?
Yeah, of just any spirits in general.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we have a strip still, so that we invested in a much more like efficient. Still, so we have two pot stills and then we have a strip still, and that will get us a lot more liquid from that start base, but that's still very, very, like, minimal.
Amazing. For those of you who are listening, go check out the episode with Tenacity, where we had Rob from Tenacity, who was in the process of opening up Tenacity Craft down in Detroit. Obviously, that got delayed due to COVID, but he really breaks down the intricacies of breaking beer into booze. Which we were able to test so many amazing booze beers, like including a cider that they distilled into like an apple brandy.
Yeah,
that was crazy. Just,
we're also
so,
going to be
so
doing that.
Good. One thing that I kind of want to ask you, because I feel like your job has changed a lot over the last year.
100%.
What would you say you do here?
Angela, what do I do here?
What doesn't Kyle do? There's... He is the glue that holds Metro Detroit in together.
Okay, chill out. So we've been
very called her out once or not. Like
I know, and now it's too much. No, there's a couple of us here. Thankfully, the last couple of years we've hired a lot of really, really good people that will put on multiple hats depending on the day to kind of make us go around and go do what we got to do. I mean, in March, April, May, I was restaurateur. I was, you know, taking beer out to cars for 3 months to try to make sure that we're okay. And then the side job of that restaurateur was making sanitizer and putting it in bottles mm-hmm. for the other 5 hours a day.
Yep.
I mean, the other guy right there, our marketing director, who's hiding. Hi, Christopher Lasher. He, you know, high-low driver, truck driver, marketing director extraordinaire. We have hired a lot of really, 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 really good people that do not mind and do not have egos to put on a different title for 5 minutes, 5 seconds, 5 days. It does not matter. So what do I do here? I don't know, man. I just I just make sure that this keeps on ticking because this is my lifeblood. This is my baby. This is my love. 5 years ago when I came aboard, I was hired to do sales. And now it's just to make sure that this company keeps on going. And we've had really good people to do it. And we're not going anywhere. Not going anywhere.
So. 5 years ago, you were doing sales. In 5 years, what do you want to be doing here at Griffin Claw? What do you want to see Griffin Claw doing in 5 years?
I have a 5-year plan for us. I don't know what COVID is going to fucking do to it. But
dream big.
It's already screwed up the last 2 years for my plans. But
this is a 7-year plan.
Yeah.
Fair.
But yeah, we. We have multiple states on the horizon. We have multiple avenues. We have multiple divisions. Just basically turning this, we're only 7 years old. And that kind of gets lost a lot of the time, that we still have not hit 10 years yet. And in those 7 years, we've kind of found our way, and we still haven't fully found our way. That's the crazy thing is we're still 7 years old. We still have a lot of learning to do. Even though we have a lot of learning to do, we've kind of proven ourselves a little bit, in my opinion. And we have a great foundation. So the world's our oyster, man. I mean, we have a lot of things to do. We have a lot of things to show. And we have the team and personnel and equipment, products to do it. So
there you go.
I was nodding to you because I kept interrupting your questions.
Right, but I mean that was I did pretty much have one more.
Okay,
I did have one more, but it does kind of just go into, you know, what's been going on with this year, and you know, 2020 has been for lack of a better term, a shit year. It's been nuts, and you know, there's one thing that I think beer drinkers have been missing is that we've been missing that beer festival. That ability to be able to go to a beer festival and try different beers from different breweries and get to know them by their beers. And not having that, I think makes it, at least I'm from outside looking in, I think that makes it very difficult to get your brand out there by not having that. So I'm curious, what have you been able to do to, I mean, other than obviously you guys have been diversifying quite heavily and putting that stuff on Facebook, but to get your name out there, to get other people to enjoy Griffin Claw in terms of their beer, their spirits, you know, Blackgrass, everything, what has been the process to get your name out there, to get more people, old and new, to enjoy Griffin Claw products?
A couple of things. So what we saw during COVID, too, is we saw that beer consumer go back home in multiple ways. So not only were they staying home, but they were going back to the products that they got, like, familiar with and that made them feel at home. So if you look at, like, national data, Two Hearted, through the roof. Anything Bell's created, through the roof. I mean, you look at IRI data, which is a combination of chain activity through the state of Michigan, Bell's is up like 27%. The number one brewery in this state that blows all of us out of the water is up 27%. Like, beer consumers went home. They basically went and explored for 15 years, and then COVID kind of brought them back home. And so what was happening during COVID, especially the first 3 to 4 months, was everyone found their comfort blanket. And they all went to the brands of, you know, Two Hearted and All Day and Oberon at the time, because that was spring. And thankfully, we were also lumped into that group. Do we deserve it? Probably not. But we were lumped in with Raggedy Ass and Mr. Blue Sky, and then Scream Pumpkin kind of fell into that group as well. So people kind of, you know, gathered to the products that they felt comfortable with. But then the innovation side, so it kind of gave us some time to do a lot of R&D. The tanks in Birmingham were full, and were full at all times. I couldn't get enough Raggedy Ass. I couldn't get enough Blue Sky, Scream Pumpkin, Seltzer. It was constant. But over here in Rochester, these tanks were also always full of research and development, because we needed to continuously evolve and then want people to come into our curbside and get crawlers and growlers or four packs. We needed a reason for them to come and drive up and get something cool and new. So all the local people, the neighborhood people in Birmingham or the people that are around the surrounding area, Rochester Hills, they needed a reason to get a new four pack. And that's what we tried to achieve throughout that time. So as opposed to festivals, we kind of used social media and our curbside to go as a research and development, cool, new, intricate things, and it worked. It was like 10 barrels of product out within 2 to 3 days every time we did it.
You had me driving from almost Flint to get some beer and food.
Yeah, and now look, you're hired.
And now I drink it every day. It's great.
It's true. Nick, you got a question to wrap us up?
Not yet, but I'm going to pass it over to Wendy. Do you have something?
So we've talked a lot about how COVID has kind of affected what's going on this year. What do you think, how do I put this properly? What do you think is going to set breweries apart from each other as this next wave starts to hit us?
It's a good question. At the beginning, I mean, what set everyone apart was planning. And a lot of breweries don't have that opportunity to plan. A lot of breweries are riding on that, you know, that next check to make sure. Because they take their, you know, their livelihood is their hobby. Their hobby is their livelihood. And not all of them are in a position that we are in, where we have a backing and we have a great ownership that has other ventures that can kind of rely on some things. So we're very, very lucky. But what's going to set them apart is not giving up. Not only did we do sanitizer, we did produce boxes.
Yes.
Not only did we do produce boxes, We did Bloody Mary kits. Mm-hmm. We did Moscow Mule kits. We did not Thanksgiving. Dear Lord, that's a couple weeks. I don't even know what time is anymore.
Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah. We did Mother's Day kits.
We did
all these things to make people come into the facility even though they shouldn't have to. We made it so that they didn't have to think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's innovation. You have to do that. You can't rest on the laurels of, oh, I hope my number one, my number two, and my number three beer will get us through this. No, you need to make
innovation.
Them come in.
Yes. Right. What is basically is what's going to separate the breweries to make it out of the winter and into the spring and keep the train going rather than faltering when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah, and it's not all beer. I mean, you have to do other things. And you have to think outside the box. And we thought about a lot of things that did not make the table. But you have to continuously think. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these businesses are either, you know, just strictly craft beer or strictly business side. And the ones that get both melted together are the ones that actually succeed. And that's what needs to work.
So I got a question.
That's
now.
Okay.
So now as we're starting to enter winter, because it sure feels like winter
is
right now. Yeah, winter is coming. Is, in your, Angela, Kyle, in your guys' opinion or my, in your, you know, if you could try and keep this going, is there a certain law that the state of Michigan can pass that can help you guys and help other breweries kind of ride out the winter and try and get us into a nicer place to keep kind of keep you guys going or afloat? Is there something that they could do to kind of help you guys out? I mean, you guys got the beer, you guys got the restaurants, you got the spirits, you got the cider.
You don't have to sell kits anymore. You can sell to-go cocktails.
Yeah. True.
Yep. So you got all these wonderful things going right now, and all the things that you've done during the first few months, that was honestly have stood out for me. But as we're starting to go into winter, is there anything that stands out that might be able to help if the state of Michigan passes something?
Pretend Nick's a little genie and you rub him and you get a wish.
Only one wish.
Ooh,
other one than wish, but it has to be a Michigan law about breweries.
Say, just rubbing, I get to rub them? Done.
Careful, my wife might be jealous.
I mean, my wife might be jealous. No, she wouldn't. I'm touching another human being, she'd be ecstatic.
How this is going right
it's
now.
It's true. there's been talks about, like, public carry.
Public carry.
Yeah.
Not the gun.
Not the gun, dear Lord.
The beer.
It's taking a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's open carry. I mean, that's been a topic. Because at the end of the, like, if we get shut down again,
mm-hmm.
Birmingham, when we got shut down, gave us Palmer Park. They gave us an extension. So that we can have like some chairs and tables. We couldn't serve them, but they could sit out there and hang out and you know, have the takeout food that they have.
Sure.
I know it's cold in the winter, but igloos are a huge thing right now. And
yes.
I'm not getting into igloos, but but like
that bothers you
a little bit.
Oh boy!
Don't you guys have igloos out front?
We do not.
You did. What happened?
We did a couple of years ago.
Okay. Sorry.
Plead the fifth. but
that's Dark Horse.
True, true, true. I mean, we have half of our company is ex Dark Horse, so that's fine. they just need to. They have to look at it and ease some of these regulations. To make sure that we don't lose half of our industry.
Yes.
Again, I can't preface enough that, like, we're very grateful and we are very lucky. But there's a lot of it, like, okay, I live in Royal Oak.
Mm-hmm.
River Rouge. I love Eddie Pie. Eddie is fantastic. Eddie is a fantastic guy. I'm very nervous for River Rouge. Mm. I don't want them to leave my community.
And he was looking to expand because he was doing so well over in Oak Park.
But he doesn't have food. You know, he has a very limited space, very limited inside and outside space. I don't want him to go away. I think he boosts up not only my property value, but I like walking to go get some beer from Eddie.
Sure.
I like that. And I don't want that to go away. And Royal Oak Brewery, I don't want that to go away. Those are people that are like my community. And some regulations and some rules need to be eased, but in all reality, MLCC and the state has been really, really good throughout all this.
That's good.
Been very, very nice. They've been, I don't want to say lenient, that's not the right word. They've been helpful.
They've been kind of helping try to, you know, guide you guys through the muddy waters that is the Great Lakes in some places.
Absolutely.
I've heard positive things from the MLCC for this year in regards to, God damn it, almost the entire show without saying in regards to. Within the realm of things, because I've spoken to the MLCC a handful of times, and they're very responsive. They've been talking to me.
They've been great.
I don't think they've been government-y. We can use that word, and I think everyone kind of makes sense as to what I'm saying.
Yeah, that,
but
that
when
makes
you
sense.
When you add what Pauline Wenzel did with her huge tie bar bill of like 13 mm-hmm. bills, as well as Michael Weber with his little off-premise districts,
open intox
districts, like I think a lot of people, what was kind of being slow had to get sped up really fast, and I
100%.
Think you know the Michigan government helped out a lot. I don't want to end on a negative note. I don't want to end on a sad note. But I have one more question because since the last year, a big thing happened, which is why we are here.
Oh, I know you're doing it.
Is the fact that Clubhouse BFD turned into Griffin Club BFD. The reaction online, we talked about social
was
media
fantastic.
Earlier.
Fantastic.
Was almost like as if you guys got bought out by Anheuser-Inf.
I know.
You have the opportunity, you have the voice, you have this podcast. You know, what would you tell people who are like, you know, because you're not a brew pub, so you can't bring in other beers. You have a full food menu. You have spirits. You have seltzers. You have ciders. You have a full 40-plus tap list. You're pretty much rivaling Dragon Meat over there now with a tap of your own beer. Yeah. What would you tell these people who are that wrote you off?
Look.
The look on his face when he said that, folks, if you can only see it.
The only reason I'm at Griffin Claw is because of Clubhouse. So the only reason majority of us, wow, I got angry and hit the mic. The majority of us are here is because of Clubhouse. So I was a distributor rep for Clubhouse 10 years ago. The only reason I'm here, I cannot preface that enough, is because of Clubhouse. I opened that place. I loved that place. It is a place in my heart. Like, I spent every Valentine's Day there for 4 years because that was the opening day. No, it's not. My wife hated it. But I demanded it because it was their opening weekend. We love that place. This was not taken. This was an easy decision. It wasn't like something we just woke up one day and was like, seems right. No, it was like a year and a half of us going back and forth and arguing and determining whether it made sense or not. And at the end of the day, what stood out was Griffin Claw is what's going to be around in 10 to 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. I'm not saying Clubhouse wasn't going to be. It just made more sense for us as a whole. And it was two different... I know we said like the same family. It was two different owners. So it was one owner bickering with another owner, bickering with somebody else. And it's kind of like getting to the point of, look, it's COVID. Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler isn't... Well, what are they now? What's that company called now?
Daimler Chrysler Ford G.
Serendipity? No, it's like an S word. It's like...
Oh.
Shit.
Oh, yeah, it did get... Something happened over COVID,
don't tell
I
my
can't
sister
remember.
It's like, it's like Serendipity. But I think
I don't know. I come from a GM family.
Yeah. same, but I drive a Ford. I don't know. But my grandpa like worked at Delphi. If he knew, if he'd still alive, he'd kill me. Yeah. But we took COVID as like a sign, kind of, and it was already really, really slow over here. Majority of the lunch crowd was gone because no one's allowed to work in offices right now.
Yep.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Let's move forward. Okay. So it sucks. I love Clubhouse. Clubhouse is ingrained in our DNA, is ingrained in my DNA. But look, we have a lot to offer, and it has 20 more handles than Birmingham does, and it has things that Birmingham won't have, and there's R&D stuff that's up here that won't go down to Birmingham, and that's intentional. They have
great food. They have great service. Most of the people that are like manager wise and bar staff wise are still the original OGs from Clubhouse 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
Oh, that's amazing in the restaurant.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, like Jamie and Dave and Rose and Mike and all these great people that were here 10 years ago.
Still here.
I love them. You know what? I mean, I could walk in and just feel like I was a rave rep 10 years ago.
Well, that's going to do it. Better on Draft Podcast 244. We appreciate Griffinclaw. Ange, thanks so much. We always enjoy seeing you here. Kyle, again, we appreciate you coming. Next time we have you on, you got to bring your little glass to show that you're an extra special guest.
My kid's been using it for, like, milk. I'm sorry.
That's, you know what?
I think we should make him shotgun a beer out in the parking lot.
Oh, gosh.
I still have only shotgun one beer, and it was a Griffinclaw beer. And you know where you can get Griffinclaw beers? Zatuna Liquor over in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Baseline Road, just a couple miles away from here.
Just down the highway.
That's going to do it for this episode of Better on Draft Podcast. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Peace.